How you doing? I'm an addict named Ralph.
Hey, Ralph.
My clean date's January 28th of 03. Today's exactly 4.5 years. Great day for a picnic here. I thought it was going to be kind of nasty on the way up, getting sprinkled on a little bit. You know, and when I come to functions and that, it takes me back to thinking that, you know, when I was using, I'd be like sitting in my recliner, shades all pulled, you know, never see the outside. And, you know, so I always think back and I appreciate what I have today.
Get closer.
Oh, I'm sorry. My sister turned 50 yesterday, and right after this, I'm going to a 50th surprise party. You know, and Rich asked me if he could put my name in the basket. And in between there, you know, I said to my family, I said, I might have to speak up in Indiana on the 28th. And I knew about the party. I said, what do you want me to do? And they said, go do what you do. You know, we'll see you afterwards. And because they know if I don't keep doing what I do, that they won't see me at all. For a long time, you know, I kept my family away from me because of the lifestyle I led. You know, I never wanted to put them in any kind of harm. So as a result of that, you know, I didn't get to know a lot of my my nieces and nephews growing up. But I make up for that today. I was raised in Troy Hill, just above the north side of Pittsburgh. And, you know, I have two sisters, mother and father. Father spent most of the time at the bar. Mother raised us. She did very well for us. Always had food on the table. Always had clean clothes to wear. If it wasn't for her, you know, I'd have been real messed up growing up. But, you know, I'm not going to talk a whole lot about the chemical, because I don't like to really stay in the mess. But, you know, I remember, you know, well, since I, you know, worked some steps and started thinking back, you know, when I used to build models as a kid, you know, they used to have it's airplane glue that you put everything together with. You know, when they took that off the market and they started going to a non-tox stuff, I didn't want to build models anymore. You know, and I never put it together, you know, that I liked that buzz, that feeling I was getting there. You know, I never thought about it back then, but, you know, I guess I had some symptoms way back then, but, you know, when I was 14 years old, I picked up a joint for the first time. I loafed with a bunch of guys that I grew up with in the neighborhood, you know, and he was trying for about 6 months for me to get high with them, and, I kept telling them no. I just never wanted to go there, never wanted to drink, never wanted to do drugs, because, you know, alcohol caused a lot of chaos in my family, and I never wanted to be like my father. But I ended up picking up because, you know, they all did it, and I just wanted to fit in. It's about 45 minutes after I smoked my first joint and got that buzz, I told my buddy, I said, something makes me feel this good can make me a lot of money. I always had a thing for money. You know, even when I was a little kid, man, I always had a shoebox, saved all, you know, all the money I got from birthdays and Christmas and stuff, and just always had an addiction to money. You know, but, you know, and I shoveled sidewalks in the wintertime, you know, when I was like 13 years old. I did the paper route thing and everything, always to get money. I always wanted the better things. You know, my parents was able to provide everything I needed, but I always wanted more. And, you know, it's amazing, though, from that one joint, ended up to snorting an ounce of cocaine a day. All through my using, everything that I did, I sold. I never wanted to pay for it. You know, I always wanted to get high on everybody else. And, you know, as time went along, as I built up more business and so forth, you know, my addiction grew. You know, at first I was happy with just, you know, making some extra money, having a few bucks to buy a few things, and just having enough left over to get high with. I always made sure that I always had profit left over. And if I did everything I had to do for free, I would just stop doing it. I was able to do that back then. You know, and at the end, you know, the business was doing very well. I couldn't snort enough to go into the hole. But, I didn't want to tell you about the last 6 months of my using. August of 2002, by this time, you know, the people I was selling to, you know, had gave me the nickname The King. And I ran with that. You know, I thought everybody should do everything for me. I didn't do anything except for get high, sit in a recliner, count money, and eat food. A lot of people used to say to me, how can you snort all that coke, you know, and eat like that? And I was like, you know, what's, you know, don't have to be hungry to eat. You know, it's just, that's another part of my addiction. I just love to eat food. I ballooned up to 320 pounds in size 54 pants, and they were tight. And, you know, my life was a mess. If that wasn't bad enough, in August of that year, you know, I had a drain leak up on my second floor from the toilet. And I got these drain bugs. And from doing all the drugs I was doing, I imagined all kinds of bugs. I was just hallucinating constantly, 24/7. And I couldn't put it together that it was the drug that was causing that. Even from the fact I used to do acid, a lot of acid years ago, I just couldn't put it together that the drugs were causing that. I had people coming in exterminating the place, housekeeper cleaning the place from top to bottom, and I just could not put it together that it was the chemical doing it. And I went to I left the country, went to Aruba for about a week or 10 days in October that year. I was still seeing all these bugs. Had exterminators come in, three different exterminators come in, had the place cleaned from top to bottom, went to Aruba, came back, no bugs anywhere. House was clean as a whistle. Picked up a chemical, they were all back again. Still couldn't put it together. Just couldn't put it together. I guess I just didn't want to believe it was, you know, my best friend causing all this problem. Anyhow, I ended up getting real sick in November of that year. A couple of my buddies came down to get some stuff, and I got up, and by this time I wasn't even snorting lines anymore. It was just putting a straw right into a big pile. There was always a pile sitting on a dresser. And I couldn't get anything up my nose. My chest was hurting, felt real heavy. I told my buddy to take me to the doctors. It wasn't so much the pain, because I figured the cocaine would take away the pain. It was about the fact I couldn't get the cocaine up. I said, something's got to be wrong. I don't have any air. So I went down to the hospital, and they put me in ICU with pneumonia. I was there for like 2 days, and I wasn't getting the treatment that I felt the king deserved, you know. And so I left AMA. So when I left, I went home to my mother's house to recover on her couch. And I just kept progressively getting worse. Ended up, I was spitting up blood, and I was just a mess. December 17th, they told me to go back to the doctors to get x-rays, to get a follow-up exam. By the time I got back home from North Hills back to Troy Hill, it's only about 7 miles. There was a message on my machine, get to Suburban General. You have a lung infection, they're going to operate on you. And when I got there, they told me it was a direct result of my cocaine use. I had exactly what it was an empyema, some kind of abscess on my lung. They had to scrape the inside and the outside of my lung. I was in the hospital from December 17th to New Year's Eve 2002. 3 tubes out of the side of my chest and on a morphine pump. And while I had been trying to recuperate at my mom's house, I kept telling her, I don't want to get high anymore. So I didn't want to give up the lifestyle. I kept going back to my house, breaking up stuff for my buddy to sell for me, and kept going back and counting the money. It would take me 2 tries just to get up a flight of steps. That's how messed up I was. But I would still go back just to count that money. And anyhow, like I said, I was on a morphine pump in the hospital. And, you know, I forgot all about the fact that I didn't want to get high anymore. I just couldn't pump. I couldn't hit that fast enough. The alarm kept going off. And they kept telling me, quit pushing the button. I'm like, take the alarm off. But I eventually, you know, told them to take me off it because people were coming to visit me. They'd be there 1 minute and they were gone the next because I kept nodding out. I'd wake up, they were gone. And, you know, I'd never done morphine or, you know, heroin, you know, and I didn't know what that nodding out feeling was really like. And I didn't really like it. But they took me off it and I was in the hospital for a few more days. Like I said, I got out on New Year's Eve. The doctor told me I was in there as a direct result of my cocaine use. Told me, he says, you can go to a party tonight if you want to, but just take it easy. And here, my poor mother, she'd been running back and forth to the hospital for the last couple of weeks and nursing me at home and stuff like that. I thought she was going to kill him because she knew I couldn't take it easy at a party. But I didn't go. I just, you know, ended up going back to her house and recuperating some more. I left her house on January 10th, you know, and I totally believed I was never going to get high again. But I wasn't going to give up the lifestyle. You know, I was too addicted to that money and, you know, that false sense of power that comes with it. And I don't remember when, but at some point in time, man, I picked up, probably a few days after I was back home, and now I was seeing snakes everywhere. It was crazy. remember stabbing the shit out of my recliner underneath, man, because I thought a boa constrictor was in it. Called up my buddy for his 45 and said, I got a boa constrictor in here. And he says, you just need to go to bed. I still really didn't believe it was the chemical. You know, I didn't know what it was. You know, those hallucinations were very real for me, and they were quite scary. On January 23rd, my paranoia had really gotten to me. You know, first of all, I thought I was invincible. I thought nobody could ever take me down. Nobody could ever do anything to me. I'd been dealing for 24 years, and I just felt like, you know, indestructible. And I knew most of the cops in the Millville area and that, and here I hallucinated somebody out back, and you know, I ended up calling them up, and that's what got me busted. Went out around the back with one, and the other one snuck in my house and saw my girl downstairs with a bag of coke in her hand, and I got busted. And I was real embarrassed to talk about that for a while, but it's my process, you know. I've heard crazier things, but immediately, you know, they want me to roll over, make this deal and stuff like that, and, you know, I wasn't willing to do that. You know, they wanted me to do this deal, and I could walk, no paper, no nothing, and I said, I can't do it, you know, because dude hadn't done nothing to me. Anyhow, they said, we're going to give you 12 hours to think about it. You know, they finally left my house like at midnight, so we're putting a camera on your house. This is, you know, if you go anywhere, we're going to add, you know, fleeting and evading charges and everything else. And meanwhile, I could barely walk a flight of steps. I wasn't going anywhere. And but they didn't want to put me down in the bullpen in case somebody would see me. So they left. I called my buddy up. I had another kilo stashed. And told him to bring me some stuff down. I figured I'm going to take myself out. You know, I mean, I'm sick. I'm just about dying. You know, my blood pressure at that time was 189 over 149. My heart rate was 151. And my sugar was 546. For a period of time, I could barely see a TV. You know, so I just figured this is what my life's going to be like, you know. Sick, can't breathe, going to jail, you know, take myself out. So I proceeded to put about an ounce of cocaine in me, a whole bunch of Vicodin, a bunch of Xanax, and chugged a bunch of vodka and a whole bottle of Tylenol PM within an hour. And figured I'd never wake up again. But I did wake up to a cop standing over me. The next day, they kicked my door in and come back for me. They took me to the hospital, had my stomach pumped. They strapped me down to the hospital bed, 4-post. Apparently, I told them I tried to kill myself. And I was strapped down to that bed for 4 days. It was real humiliating. You know, couldn't do anything for myself. It was about 2 days. My mom didn't even know I was in the hospital until like 2 days later. She come walking in, and I'll never forget that look on her face. It's this look of, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like emotional pain. And I just started crying. And, you know, I never wanted to put her through that again. But, you know, they started talking about 302 in me. I just said, can't I just go get some help? You know, I didn't know what help was. You know, my ex-girlfriend had tried to get clean a couple times. And, you know, and I just kept telling her NA was sucking the life out of her. And, you know, she just needed to come back. And so I didn't, you know, I mean, I wasn't, didn't know what NA was, but I wasn't a fan of it, even though I didn't know what it was. But, anyhow, I ended up going to rehab on January 28th. I said I wanted help, but it was mostly just to put some time between me and the cops, because I knew they were waiting for me. And, so I went to rehab. While I was in rehab, trying to work deals over the phone, you know, kind of stuff lined up, because my money was gone. You know, and the coke that I had there was gone, and I knew I was going to need money for a lawyer. So I'm trying to work deals over the phone, and by the time I got out, though, one of my close friends had took all the coke I had, the last $10,000 in cash I had, went to Cancun, Mexico, and Vegas at my expense. You know, and he was one of the people that I had that misplaced loyalty for. But so I went to rehab, you know, and I learned some stuff. You know, it took me like a week or so to admit I was an addict. You know, they said to me, what are you here for? I said, because I got busted selling drugs. You know, I really didn't think I was an addict at that time. You know, because for a long period of time, not at the end of my run, but I was able to just like stop for a week on vacation, you know, and just not do anything. You know, so I just always figured I had it under control. One guy, he's actually a good friend of mine now, he's a therapist up there, and he says, look, he says, until you get honest with yourself, you're never going to get help. So you're never going to help yourself. You're going to be in the same predicament again. So, you know, I started introducing myself as an addict. I wasn't real sure that I was at the time, but I figured it couldn't hurt. And, you know, while I was in there, you know, I started hearing some people that, you know, had some of the same problems that I did. And, you know, started feeling like maybe I do belong. But, you know, and they told me while I was in there, go to 90 meetings in 90 days and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm like, yeah. And, you know, I still thought I knew everything. You know, meanwhile, still, I was still scared as hell to get out of there because I knew I was going to have to face consequences. And I didn't want to face them. But, you know, I got out of there, I don't know, like the 12th or 13th of February. Went to the first meeting, and it's the home group that I'm at now. And it was a smoking meeting then. I went in there, and I sat on, you know, like the doorway. Two reasons. One, because it was close to the outside. And second of all, my lung couldn't take all that smoke. Then they split up into two meetings and sort of freaked me out because I was like right in the middle then. And I got up, you know, went to the bathroom. And right before I went to the bathroom, I seen my ex-girlfriend for the first time since we had gotten busted. And she did what she had to do to, you know, to keep herself from going to jail. And that was fine with me. But, you know, the fact was is if somebody would have did something like that when I was still using and dealing, they would have got hurt. So when she seen me, you know, there was a lot of fear in her eyes. She put her hand on my knee, said, good to see you. And she turned around and ran in fear. You know, and that really messed my head up, you know, because, I mean, I loved her. I'd have died for her. And here she was running away from me in fear. So when I went to the bathroom, I was like, you know, what are you doing here? You know, you're a hypocrite. You always said NA sucked, and you didn't even know what it was. But, you know, why don't you just leave? So I was on my way out the door when a guy that's a good friend of mine now stepped right in front of me. He seen I was leaving. He seen I was messed up. And, he said, why don't you come on back and sit down, and you don't have to do this all by yourself. And it just put enough of a distraction in front of me so that I didn't leave, because I was going to die that night. And for my first 6 months being clean, you know, I didn't want to be here. You know, I was MFing God every morning for waking me up. You know, I just didn't have the courage to kill myself. And but, you know, I was going through the motions. I went to outpatient, and they told me, you know, if you get these meeting papers signed, it'll look good for the judge. You know, so like a good addict, I was going to like 17 meetings a week. And I hooked up with a guy that, you know, was really into getting clean. And, you know, we just went to meetings all over the place. And, you know, when something clicked with me was when I realized I was shaking down people so I could get gas money to go to meetings. People still owed me money, you know. And I just started laughing. I said to him, I said, you realize what we're doing? And he goes, yeah, I just didn't want to say nothing because it was getting us to where we needed to be, you know. And so I eventually got a sponsor. And, you know, I talked to him about that. And he told me I need to let them debts go. Anything with an honest debt, I could keep. All the other debts I had to let go, which was probably about $80,000 to $100,000 worth of debts. And it was tough for me, but, you know, I didn't want to go to jail. You know, and I knew if I didn't start changing, I was going to, you know, keep repeating myself. But, anyhow, when I got out of rehab, too, I called up a guy that I was getting stuff from. I needed some money. I needed some money for a lawyer. I had nothing. So he picked up the phone, and I told him, I said, King. He said, F you, click. Called up his place of business. He said, tell King don't show up here. This is the guy that wanted me to make a deal with him, you know, to walk. And, you know, at that point in time, I started thinking, I should have made the deal, you know, that misplaced loyalty. But, anyhow, I was too late for all that, so I went in June to get sentenced. And but they told me, they says, look, there was a guy on the street that said, put out on the street that I was a snitch, that I was making buys from people. Hadn't done it, but, you know, whatever. And here, he got busted, made buys off of my guy. So they told me, he said, look, if you just testify historically, we'll give you leniency. So where do I sign? I didn't used to talk about that either because I used to worry about people thinking, you know, judging me. I don't care. It's just what I need to do. But anyhow, when I had about 90 days clean too, I took a GSR position. Someone told me it'd be good for me. You know, and I got a big mouth. I like to be the center of attention. So I took it. Still didn't want to be here at the time, but I figured I better start doing something to fit in. And you know what? I've been involved in service ever since then, of one aspect or another. I've not been without a service commitment since then. You know, now I'm the vice chair of H&I from North Pittsburgh. I got a call from my chair that on the way when I was down here, he's resigning. So now I guess I'm going to be the chair, which is really cool because I'm at home at H&I. Like I was telling the people that did the H&I meeting before, man, it's just there's no BS in there. There's no room for opinions. It's just all about carrying the message. And it's just it's a real good feeling, a real good place to be. But, when in September of 03, I don't know if it was, I guess it was 03, whenever the flood was, that September, when Ivan hit, the DA came to me too, and he says, "Look, he says Millville flood victims need money. It'd be a good idea if you'd sign like $30,000 of that money we confiscated over you, off of you." To Millville flood victims. I just said, where do I sign, you know? Because like I said, I knew it was illegal money. I could have gotten some of it back, but I just didn't want to go to jail. And I knew they could use it more than I could. But, you know, that still surprises me now that I did that. Because all these years, you know, that I've been living and stuff, is it's always been about the money. And that was a big step for me. I don't know, so, I mean, I still have to testify, you know, I haven't been sentenced yet, and, you know, I'm going to do what I got to do, but, you know, I still worry about the fact of what's going to, I don't want anything to ever happen to my family, you know, and there's some pretty big people in that, but, you know, I was supposed to go get sentenced on December 4th, and, you know, it's all going to come down to that, you know, but, you know, now, though, I mean, probably after, like, the first 18 months, you know, I started doing this for myself. You know, I wasn't doing it for the courts anymore. I've been getting meeting papers signed ever since. Nobody's looked at them yet. You know, my first 18 months, like, they sucked. Until I read a paper, a buddy of mine suggested I read this paper. I forget the doctor's name, but the title of it was called The Flat Ceiling, and it was about what cocaine addicts go through when they get clean. You know, where heroin addicts and stuff, you know, when you get clean, you're past that dope sick, there's a reward. You're not dope sick anymore. Cocaine addict, you're going a mile a minute, you know, for so long, you get clean, and it's like the world starts going in reverse. I mean, it's going so slow. And, but it's normal to feel that way. It's normal to feel that way. And it started passing probably, I guess, around the time, about 2 years clean. It was like it was gone. And life starts catching up or whatever and started feeling normal. You know, like I said before, when I, first 6 months or so, I wanted to die every day, you know, and I was on my way to a meeting, Sunday Surrender, August 24th of 03. Never forget, I'm on my way, my buddy calls me up. There was a dude that used to live with me for 12 years, and he was partners in crime with me and everything. He was like my brother. He had to go live with a friend of mine because I couldn't support him anymore and he didn't want to change his way of life. And on my way to that meeting, I get a call. It's this big guy, King's dead, I mean, Rat's dead. And he shot himself in the head. 3 days before that, he went to get sentenced for the trouble we got in. He only got 6 months probation. You know, I'm thinking, cool, you know, he's not going to go to jail. And you know, but him and my buddy have been arguing about his drinking and his drugging. I guess he just didn't want to live anymore. I know where he was at in his head, because I was there once. You know, that's when I started asking, how do I change how I feel? I didn't want to feel that way anymore. I didn't want anybody to feel like I was feeling, you know, so I didn't want to kill myself anymore. I started working on some steps, you know, and it started helping. You know, and as far as what I really can say about the steps, is they need to be worked. They have been very beneficial in my life. As far as how to work them, that's between anybody and their sponsor. That's how I feel is the right way to work, you know, is because I figured God put me and my sponsor together, and how he needed me to work them is how I work them. But, I had the same sponsor for probably until around last April. You know, and we got into a, you know, little business relationship, and it went sour, and he quit coming around to meetings. He's still clean. He quit coming around to meetings, and he wasn't working on anything, so I quit working on stuff. You know, and that was I stopped working on stuff probably 8 months before that, but, you know, I just started getting real crazy again, real crazy. Started doing some real stupid stuff. And, you know, I knew I had to go get another sponsor, didn't want to go get a sponsor, started finding all the defects in everybody. I was like, you can't sponsor me because you're doing this, you can't sponsor me because you're doing this. And meanwhile, ain't nobody perfect around here. And sponsors there to help you guide through the steps. And so I finally asked somebody to sponsor me, and he's perfect for me. It's really weird. But this guy doesn't use the workbook. He's been around for a while before the workbook, and I don't like to do as much writing as they want you to do in the workbook, because when it comes to reading and writing, I am lazy. I do what I need to do. It needs to be done, though. You know, he had me on my seventh step for a year, you know, and I wasn't happy about that. He says, you know, teach you patience. But it did. Did a lot of praying, a lot of acting out, and, you know, I just did my eighth step. I got to go over it with him, and I ain't looking forward to the ninth step. It's a process, and it needs to be done. I know all the other steps I've done before have helped me out. You know, when I did my sixth step, I really got involved with trying to change some of my defects, like especially my eating. You know, I lost probably like 80 pounds in recovery doing it one day at a time. You know, where it used to be where I'd just go and binge and eat, because, you know, I definitely have a food addiction. And I would just go and binge and eat, and I'd be like, oh, screw it, and just put on more weight. You know, but this program taught me to do it one day at a time. Whatever you do, just tomorrow's a new day. Start over. And, you know, this year I started camping. Well, last year I started camping again for the first time. And I went to the Butler Retreat. Got poured on Friday night. Nobody told me to camp around my tent. Got soaked. Loved it. I've been coming to... I came to this retreat the first time back in, I guess, 04. And, you know, I liked going to retreats, but I was what I considered a pamper camper and always being in one of the rooms. But you know what? I find out now that I was missing out on a whole lot by not camping. It's so much more fun. I feel so much more involved. And one thing I've learned here is you need to have fun in recovery. I see the people with it, you know, don't have fun in recovery, and I've seen a lot of them go back out. I mean, if you're not having any fun, what's the point? But, you know, this year I took a couple newcomers to a couple retreats I've been to. And, you know, it's kind of funny, though, that, you know, when I was using, if I told somebody, hey, you know, I got a bag of shit and, you know, and so forth, let's go camping somewhere, you know, they'd have been, like, all over it. You know, people now, man, you know, they come into the rooms and they don't have anything, and all of a sudden it's a pride issue. But I know where they're at because, you know, people try to do the thing for me, and I didn't want to, you know, and I wouldn't do it. So that's what I try to impress upon them, you know, look, I had a hard time here at first. You know, don't do what I did. You know, come have some fun. And just to see, you know, that after the weekend's over, look on their face of just like, wow, this is great. You know, it's a real good feeling for me, too. You know, this has been a real life-changing experience for me. You know, I have no medical conditions now. The only thing I do is take 2 Allegra D for allergies. You know, blood pressure's all down. You know, everything's good. And it's just really amazing. 4.5 years, how much my life has changed. Yeah, I had a real good week this week. I've been working at this job for the last 4 years. I got it from somebody in the program. They gave me a phone number to apply for it, and I went and did the footwork, which I had never done before, and got the job, and I do, you know, service and sales. You know, and I put like a dozen new accounts in this week. It's just a real boost to the self-esteem, you know. I wasn't getting nothing for a while, and, you know, everything's starting to come together now, and it's more accounts than anybody's gotten the whole year. And, you know, to come here, we never thought it was going to rain. It turned out to be a beautiful day. And, you know, get to go watch my sister celebrate her 50th birthday tonight. You know, I'd have missed out on all this, man. I'd have been dead by now if I was using it. I'd have never made it. You know, and, you know, I just want to thank Rich for asking me to speak here, and I just want to thank you all for letting me be me again. Thanks.